morning, everyone. Good morning. Welcome to Jays Talk Plus on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also on Sportsnet Television as well. Show Ali, Julia Kreutz with you today. Jules, how are we doing this morning? It's nice to see you.
I'm doing all right, Joe. It is very, very nice to be back with you. We're almost ready to put a bow on the season, and so only fitting that we would have one more chance at this.
It's true. It's kind of funny. There are a couple more Jays Talk Plus episodes to go in the season. Blake is done for the year. Blake's wisely, I think, getting load managed before the end of the Jays season, but also before the end of the Raptors season.
He is the Bowden Francis of our group, after all.
He is, yeah. You know, I struggled to come up with a one-for-one comparison for Blake, because he has to be, along with Blair and Barker, like the front end innings eater, front end of the rotation type of starter. You know what I mean? Like Blair, Barker, 100%. And Blake are the Gausman, Berríos, Bassett
Absolutely.
Of the rotation, I would say.
Yeah, I agree. And we know how hard Blake works and how much he cares about this. And so I am glad that he gets some time off before jumping into to basketball.
Well, you know, not too much time off, because Raptors Media Day is on Monday.
Oh,
so,
boy.
And then the Raptors play, I think, in Montreal. So he'll be, he has his hands full before the season
nice.
Starts later in October. But we will try and capably fill that void. It is funny, though, because it's our last voyage. Nick Ashbourne will be in with me tomorrow on Friday. But for you and I, we've done a lot of these over the years, including the Jays Talk Classics. But this is the last one of the season. It's kind of surreal to say, given that there will be no Jays Talk in the postseason this year.
100%. It's definitely been a different season than the ones that we've been used to a little bit, right, Joe? And obviously sad that we're not going to get any Jays talk in the postseason. At the same time, I kind of like the symmetry of us having done this show right, you know, during the All-Star break, in the return for the second half there. We are going to revisit our bold predictions from that week, which is going to make us both look very, very bad.
We don't have to.
but it is, you know, it's kind of nice to wrap it up in this way. It's not always that we get such a nice bow tie into the season here.
So let's talk about the last couple of games here as we wrap up the season. Like you said, four games to go in the regular season. One more game against the Red Sox tonight. There's a day off tomorrow. And then three against, of all teams, the Miami Marlins. I've gotten somewhat used to seeing the Jays play, you know, like the Orioles, the Rays, or the Yankees to end the season, the Red Sox even. But the Marlins in town starting Friday. But tonight, the Red Sox series wraps up at the Rogers Center. However, the Jays are on a five-game losing streak after last night's 6-5 extra innings loss at the Dome. And we can talk about the bullpen. It's one of many things the Jays needs to fix in the offseason, Jules. This is true. But I did want to talk about, you mentioned it off the top, Bowden Francis.
Right.
Because Bowden Francis, his season's now over, right? He's not going to pitch anymore. And he had five innings of three-hit ball, no runs allowed, four Ks, one walk, 71 pitches, 48 strikes. A great way for Bowden Francis to end the season. A pretty steady outing. Was pretty efficient, all things considered. Something we've gotten used to seeing from him. He'll finish the year total with 103 2/3 innings pitched, 92 strikeouts, and a 3.30 ERA. What's more remarkable, Jules, is if you drill down into his last 10 starts, because of course those numbers include when he was started the season with the Blue Jays, and we'll hear from Bowden Francis in a sec here, but he wasn't great initially to start, but in his last 10 starts, including last night, 64 2/3 innings pitched, just 44 base runners allowed. Period. Yeah. Whether that's home runs, hits, walks, hits batters, whatever you want to say, for an ERA of 1.81. Over 10 starts. That is that's not just good. That is like best Blue Jay ever type good.
That
it's
is Cy Young caliber good. Yeah. And it remains to be seen if this is something that can be sustained over an entire season. But you have to look at what Francis has done, and you have to understand that he figured something out for himself. And I was in the Mets, on the Mets side of things, when they almost got no hit by Bowden Francis. one of several here who kind of almost had that fate. And Carlos Mendoza, the manager, his assessment to me was the best on Bowden Francis, which is, it's nothing necessarily too overpowering, but he has such a great feel for pitching. He knows where he wants to locate, and he knows exactly what he wants to throw, what the situation calls for. And so this is as much about form, as much about, you know, figuring out mechanics, maybe adding a new pitch as he did with the splitter, as it is just baseball IQ. and understanding where he is and what the situation is. So I thought that was a very interesting assessment, and you kind of see it time and time again. He's not blowing hitters away by any means, but he's just he has that cerebral quality that maybe we've seen in a guy like Chris Bassett before, right? Who is buds with Bowden Francis, obviously. So it does it again last night in a great way to end the season.
He just has the most elite of command.
Yeah.
The command is wild. And it's kind of funny because, to your point, not overwhelming stuff. He's not blowing fastballs by guys at 99 miles an hour. But, you know, I think in the last couple of starts, the Vila was dipped. I know he has been dealing with some fatigue. He has never thrown this many innings before. He's never really been a consistent member of a starting rotation, really, ever. So it's nice to see him get that chance. And we can talk about next year's rotation and his place within it in a sec. But just I've just been so impressed because, you know, it's just you don't often see, I guess, Jules, you don't see a lot of pitchers, especially in the modern MLB, get by with elite command and just so-so stuff. I feel like most pitchers kind of have to have one pitch they're able to just blow by guys.
Right.
And we've talked about that with Gausman, and he is kind of relearning that to a certain extent as he gets a teensy bit older. The velo has been up and down on the four-seam fastball with him. Barrios still pretty young, all things considered, so it's not an issue with him. You mentioned Chris Bassett. That has never really been a hallmark of any of Bassett's pitches. And now here you are with Bowden Francis. Even in years past, I mean, the Blue Jays had Hyunjin Ryu not that long ago, and that was a hallmark of Ryu's pitching ability for, I mean, I would say his entire career, even before he came to Major League Baseball, and now he's in the KBO, and it's still part of his game as he's gotten a little older. So it's kind of interesting to see the give and take with some of these pitchers. But, I mean, Bowden Francis is not an old man by any means, so it's interesting to see him be able to get by with this at this age. And again, he's got to be solidly in the rotation at this point.
For sure. And here's the thing, right? So last year, Bowden was, I guess, competing for a rotation spot going into the spring.
Right.
We didn't really know what he was going to be. We knew he could be a long man, and that was it, really. And there were a bunch
of questions. I thought the ship had sailed on him being a starter, honestly. Hand up.
He comes in to spring training. He has great spring training. He really impressed the coaching staff, not just by the way that he was throwing, but also the determination, the commitment, the mentality around what it is that he was trying to achieve. And sure, it didn't work out right away. It seldom does, right, Joe? You can look at any prospect in this league or any guy that is up and coming, and you can see that nothing is linear in Major League Baseball. And Francis was certainly another example of that. But this is going to be a different offseason for him. The Blue Jays know what they have.
Right.
And if the Blue Jays are intent on keeping him around and making him part of the rotation, then this is what his offseason is going to look like. He is going to prepare as a starter from day one. And there's not just freedom in that, right? There's also preparation. There's also what your body is going through and how you're going to prepare, how you're going to adjust things like diet, exercise, all of those things in order to come into spring training as a starter. That's got to bode well for Francis' future as well.
You know, it wasn't last night, but it was a couple of starts ago. I guess it was two starts ago, not including last night. But after the game, he was talking to reporters, and he was talking a little bit. I'm not sure if you were at the previous start, but he was talking about how he doesn't throw quite as hard. It might have been Keegan from our MLB.com bureau who asked him this question, but he was talking about how hard he throws the velo, the fastball being a little funky when it comes to speeds, and how, you know, he, like you're talking about, doesn't throw overwhelming stuff. And he at the very tail end of his answer, he basically said, yeah, going into next year, I'm going to try and throw harder. And I thought that was really interesting because I'm not really sure I don't really think he needs to necessarily. Like, sure, maybe that was just a part of him talking to the media after a long start. He just kind of said one of the things that came to his mind in a question that was about velo, right? I'm not saying he was baited into it by any means. It's just I do wonder about the need for him to actually, like, throw harder when we get to 2025. I'm not really sure that should be at the very top of Bowden Francis's list, if that makes sense.
Well, we've seen him throw 97 before.
Sure. Yeah.
We know that he's capable of doing it. But with him, I would agree with you that it seemed like things started picking up and, you know, he became the guy that we're seeing now and we've seen for an extended period of time when the velocity was not the focus anymore. And the focus was location and making sure that he was commanding those pitches extremely well. Now, there were still a couple of middle pitches, whether that's breaking balls or fastballs, even in those two near no-hit bids that he had. And, you know, you kind of look at that and sure, pitchers are going to make mistakes. Nobody is perfect. And if you are perfect, then you, you know, join Dave Steeb or
sure.
whatever. But this is just where we are. And so to look at what Francis is doing now and think about what is the next step, how can he improve? Sure, he should take a look at the velo. But I agree with you that it should not be the main point of concern.
So I know you've gone down to the Dome a number of times. You've spoken to Baden Francis. Yeah. The Shaman, as we've learned, is his nickname. He's very, I would have picked like Zen Master, but
yeah.
Shaman I think is just cooler. But if we're being honest, that's just a cooler nickname.
Less accurate maybe, but cooler.
But
yeah.
Cooler, yes. The rule of cool, I think, is always the tiebreaker, the difference maker. So I'm all here for Shaman. I wanted to hear from Francis himself. I know you are very familiar with his cadence. He's a very laid back. He's very thoughtful when he considers any question being asked of him. And he was asked last night about what did he learn this year? Because this is a guy, as we were talking about, was in the starting rotation to start, got absolutely hammered. I think his very first start was against the Astros in what ended up being a no-hitter from Rodel Blanco against the Blue Jays. And on the other side, the Astros just teed off on Baden Francis. He hit the IL at one point. He was kind of splitting starts with Yariel Rodriguez after a certain point. They both went on the IL, and then a phenomenal second half of the season. So it's a lot. That's a lot to take in from, I think, I would say for anyone, much a position player, a pitcher. So let's hear from Baden Francis. This is the man of the hour, Baden Francis himself, on what he learned this season.
I think just learning, you know. I came in the season and only starting in AAA, there's things you can get away with, and then I get my starts up here, and you know, I got pumbled, but I sort of grew through that, and I learned that I gotta do more homework and I gotta execute better and I gotta adapt. So I just kind of went back to the drawing board and went back to the pen and just got my work done. But when I got back down to Buffalo, I just felt like I caught like a second wind and learned that this is the time to turn around. I felt like I was still in a good spot, like timing wise, and my arm was at a good spot, and I repped it enough for me to, you know, like adapt when I don't feel that great. But yeah, just I lost a little bit of horsepower, I will, but I just learned that it's not all about the horsepower. You gotta drive the car too. I feel like I tried to really be intentful in each of my pitches so I would not let up, and I just felt like it helped me out.
There's Baden Francis chatting a little bit about, again, what he learned this season over the journey of the season, and towards the end there he was talking about I guess like fatigue to a certain extent, mm-hmm. but I mean, he used the term horsepower about driving your car and so on. I quite like that analogy.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think it is something important, because you got to think that Kevin Gausman has learned that lesson, just to use that as an example, right?
For
you got to
sure.
think that Chris Bassitt has learned that lesson. And why? Because those guys have been in Major League Baseball for years and years and years
yeah.
and years. I think it was Barker who pointed this out, that Gausman has thrown something close to 29,000 pitches in his career.
Baden Francis, wild.
That's an insane number just to like say out loud.
Yeah.
But Francis obviously is nowhere near that. But that, I think that's just something you learn about yourself as your role continues to evolve. And I mean, if Francis's role, period, now is a yeah. starter, he's going to have that in the back of his mind, I think, forever, essentially.
It's interesting because it seems also like it's one of those things that you can have all the mentorship in the world. You can have a Kevin Gausman and a Chris Bassitt and a Jose Barrios by your side, telling you what it is, what to expect from an entire season,
yeah.
or, you know, how to, I guess, have that type of longevity. But it seems like this is just something that pitchers have to understand for themselves in their own time. And for Francis, that meant, you know, getting pummeled, as he said, a couple of times in the majors, going back down, going through the IL stints, and kind of figuring out for himself what it is that works and doesn't work, and what and how he can have that longevity over the course of a season. Now, 103 and two-thirds innings pitched, we're probably going to see that go way up next year.
Yeah,
if he is part of the rotation. So again, it's a new challenge. There are more things to consider, and there will be more setbacks. Obviously, that is just part of the deal. But it's kind of cool when, I guess, a player allows you in their brain a little bit, in like, this is what happened, and this is what I figured out, and this is why I'm here now. We don't usually get those types of answers. And so, you know, not only do I appreciate it as a reporter, I also think that this is a guy that the Blue Jays should be looking at that and, you know, thinking about next year and what is it that we're going to do with this guy? Because obviously now you start hearing, you know, perhaps a little bit of trade rumors, because this is someone, you know, this is a pretty coveted starter now. Do the Blue Jays, you know, dangle Bowden Francis around to maybe try to fix other areas on the squad that also need some attention? You don't know, but if the Blue Jays are serious about keeping him around, declarations like those are a pretty good indication that he's ready for a full-time rotation job.
I mean, to your point, I mean, maybe if you're trying to use a relative, I don't know if I would call it a full position of strength, just because, you know, Gausman another year older, Bassett a year older, but I mean, knowing that Bassett is going into the last year of his deal, like if you are trying to both clear up money and get something back, then I actually would think that the better asset to trade, it would probably be a Bassett. Now, again, Bassett's had a bit of a topsy-turvy season, and I mean, you watched seven guys and what could be his last start, although he did say he intends to make his last start of the season, which would line up to be Sunday on the final day of the regular season. But I mean, I'm not necessarily advocating to trade Bassett, but it just feels like if you are trying to allocate resources in 2025 or in the offseason before the season next year gets started, if you're trying to allocate all this money as wisely and as possible, then it's kind of funny because we talked about going into the offseason that, you know, if you had Gausman, Berríos, Bassett as your 1-2-3, you'd need two more starters in theory.
Yep.
And one of, if not both of, Yariel Rodriguez and Bowden Francis can answer those questions in some way, shape, or form. I think Francis has certainly answered that question.
For sure.
I think we would all agree that. Yariel Rodriguez, I don't know if that question has 100% been answered, but then again, it was his first season in Major League Baseball, so maybe that question gets a little clearer by the end of the, maybe by, you know, by the spring training, by the end of the offseason, depends on what line you want to draw in the sand.
Very unique case.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. He's like not a normal case, I would say, right? But even if he starts next year in the bullpen, then you kind of still need someone to, I don't know if I want to necessarily call it bridging the gap to the Alek Manoah return, because you don't really know what's going on with Manoah. I mean, I think I would generously say he'd be back maybe shortly after the trade deadline. You know, end of July, maybe mid-August.
Yeah.
This is roughly when Hyunjin Ryu returned in a similar surgery situation. So, and then if he returns, is he going to be good? That's the other half of the question, right? So you kind of still need to figure out some things about the starting rotation next season. But, I mean, it's also a lot of money being committed to all of Gausman, Berríos, and Bassett. And Gausman under contract until the end of the 2026 season. Berríos under contract for a little longer, but Bassett only under contract until the end of next season. So I wonder if that's where you start to maybe have a little, you know, push and pull when it comes to movement in the rotation.
Yeah, we've also seen, though, that the depth is so important, right? It's you can really never have too much starting pitching, and we saw that this year.
Sure.
It looked like a position of strength, and then all of a sudden, it wasn't. It just evaporated, and so if the Blue Jays want to go that route, I would say that you have a great point there, but I don't know. I don't think I would.
but I guess my point is, like, I wouldn't trade any of them. Is my point, really. Like, I would go into 2025 with a starting rotation. You can order it however you want, right? But like, you could order it in any 1-2-3-4. But Gausman, Berríos, Bassett, Francis are your four, and you like figure out the fifth spot. Honestly, like, I don't think the fifth guy, because I really truly don't think when it comes to needs, are the Blue Jays going to spend a bazillion dollars on Corbin Burnes or Blake Snell this offseason? Like, probably not, right? Because they need to buy a couple of bats. Probably they need to rebuild the bullpen. They need to spend on a backup catcher as well. Like, they do need to sign a starter, probably, if you think Yariel Rodriguez is not that guy. But I mean, you
Kikuchi
know,
reunion.
I mean, he's probably going to get paid too, right? He's probably going to get paid more than Chris Bassett, and he deserves to. Gosh, he's been phenomenal for the Astros. But I mean, I don't know. Maybe a Jordan Montgomery, who has not had the most great career in the last couple of seasons after being very good for the Yankees and for the Cardinals to a certain extent. Yep. So I don't know. It's probably going to be that kind of pitcher, maybe even a little bit less than when it comes to figuring out that fifth spot. Because I think the other part of the equation, Jules, is also how do you really determine what a Bloss is going to be next year? Could he be that fifth starter by the time the spring comes around? He might be.
Perhaps.
That's a great way to save some money, but we have no idea.
Will Adam Mako be ready to make his major league debut at some point next year? We don't know. There are some intriguing names for sure, but you know, when you start to look at the surefire names, then the list gets a little bit thinner for the Blue Jays.
We're going to talk to Patrick Dubuque, managing editor of Baseball Prospectus, on the other side in about 10 minutes or so.
Great.
Get his take on things, certainly all things Blue Jays, but take a look around all the many playoff races going on around Major League Baseball. A couple of teams clinching more spots last night as the playoff races, the wild card races, begin to fully take shape, I would say. The Astros clinching the AL West for the seventh time in the last eight seasons last night. What else happened last night? The Orioles beat the Yankees to not win the division, but to clinch a playoff berth. And the Padres turning a triple play to end the game against the Dodgers to clinch a playoff berth themselves in Los Angeles. That's a pretty, I mean, how often do you see triple plays, much less to clinch a playoff spot, Joe's? That's pretty cool.
If that happens in a movie about baseball, you're like, that's pretty far-fetched. So, yeah, they couldn't have scripted it any better. Well, it's the Padres, right? So you kind of expect a little bit of excitement out of them.
Yeah, hey, great stuff for Manny Machado to start that triple play at third base. He was phenomenal, and I mean, they all were, really. So we'll talk about a lot of that stuff with Patrick Dubuque on the other side. But before we do that, why don't we quickly revisit our bold predictions, our second half bold predictions.
Don't need
predictions.
To dwell on
it. Yeah, we don't need to, like, really linger, I would say, too much, because... Let's be honest, they weren't very good. Okay, so look, we'll go with yours first, because yours, I think, were not numbers related. They were just very general, but I did like these at the time. Your two were Danny Jansen will still be a Blue Jay after the trade deadline, and hey, we saw a standing ovation for Jano last night, and it was for him in a Red Sox uniform, so that did not come to pass. He actually might have been like one of the first Blue Jays to get traded in terms of like all of the expiring deals, which is kind of funny how that worked out.
As soon as I saw that, I got that notification on my phone, I said, well, there it goes. But what I meant really is that he will always be a Blue Jay.
In spirit.
In our hearts. That's what I meant, Cho.
You'd also said the Blue Jays will finish the season with a winning record. Now, look, I had said to you at the time that anything above 74 wins would be bold when we did this at the All-Star break. And you went, like, really bold.
Yep.
You weren't, like, 78 wins. You said they would finish with a winning record. So, like, 82 wins or more, effectively.
Yes.
And, unfortunately, they are well below that threshold. They are not finishing. They've been mathematically eliminated, and they are not finishing with a winning record.
It's tough. I mean, you've seen it before. Team sort of cleans house, brings in young guys, and they're so excited to be there. They go on a 10-game win streak or whatever, when it doesn't matter
they
anymore.
They kind of did go on a bit of a run, though. They did, kind of.
You know what? I was riding really high when that was happening, and I was like, okay, here we go. Bold prediction. We're going to do this. And then the bottom fell off, which it's fine. This is the season for that, and we understand. Yeah. Can't help but be a little bit disappointed that they didn't pull that off.
Well, don't worry. My three bold predictions were, I would say, even further away. So do not worry. I'm not saying all that to make you feel bad, because mine were not very good. I had Spencer Horwitz will be at or around a batting average of .325 for the rest of the season, and will at a minimum stay above .300 for the rest of the year. I think last I checked, actually I checked this before last night's game, but I think he was hovering around .270, .275, thereabouts. So he did fall below .300, still having a decent season, but the bold prediction did not come true. Davis Schneider will raise his batting average. So his batting average at the time, Julia, was .217. And I said he would raise it by the end of the season to at least .250 and would have an OPS of 800 by the end of the year. So I checked.
Oh, no.
Dave, I haven't checked his OPS. I'm guessing it's around 600, 650 thereabouts. But his batting average as of last night was below 200. So not only did it not get better, it got way worse, unfortunately.
Oh, don't worry. I have the accurate numbers here for you,
great.
Show. Batting average, .195, OPS, .632.
It's not good.
I mean,
for Schneider.
I kind of understand why you went with that. It's been a tough season for him. Who would have predicted that?
I honestly, I just kind of felt like things had to even out for him. And they not only did they not, they really bottomed out. Truly, they did. So and he raised his statistics to what you just read in the last like week, 10 days or so, which is honestly remarkable. So, well, I guess there's a chance that he gets to 250 by the end of the season. But I don't know what the math would be for him to get to that point in four games. So I'm guessing it would be like Shohei Ohtani going 6-for-6, 10 RBI in basically every game from now until the end of the season. And frankly, even that might not be enough. So I'll say this. My last bold prediction was probably the worst one because I made this off the cuff on the fly, and I was kind of hoping it would come true because we were on the air when the Joey Votto making his debut for the Bisons thing happened, and I thought, man, Votto's going to play for the Blue Jays this year. So I said Votto would play 50-plus games and hit 15 home runs for the Blue Jays at the major league level. He played no games and hit 0 home runs for the Blue Jays at the major league level because he retired before he ever got back to Major League Baseball. So there you go. He retired in such a way, Julia, because he didn't actually play, that the Hall of Fame clock for Votto actually started when he left Cincinnati. It's how it ended up working, I believe.
And if I'm not mistaken, and I could be, but if you Google his name, his MLB page, his photo is with a Blue Jays hat, which is, and it will always forever be a Blue Jays hat, which is just, you know, it doesn't seem right to me.
I agree with you. I tend to agree with you. I will give some kudos to some of the fans. I actually have some fan bold predictions who had texted in when we did this as well. So I got two for you. So Pete in PEI had said that Kevin Biggio would play a pivotal role in a Dodgers championship run. Because, of course, the Blue Jays, after he got DFA'd, traded Biggio to the Dodgers. Biggio is no longer with the Dodgers. He is, I believe, a part of the Braves organization now. I'm not sure if that has changed in the last 24 hours, but either way, he's not with the Dodgers. So he will not, unfortunately, Pete, be playing any sort of role in Dodgers championship run. But I will give Clifton in Etobicoke some credit, Jules, because he had a great one at the time. So we were doing the show, I believe it was at the end of the All-Star break. Yep. We were coming back out of the All-Star break, and the Blue Jays were playing the Tigers. And we talked to Jason Beck from MLB.com about the Tigers and their chances in the second half. Well, if you haven't been living under a rock and you're a big baseball fan, you'll know that the Tigers are right now in a wild card spot. And that was Clifton's prediction. At the time, he said the Blue Jays' opponent, the Tigers, would be a wild card team. So Clifton, man, if they hang on here in these last couple of games, you will be correct. You'll be the only person who is correct. So well done.
Clifton. Thank you for chiming in and adding some sanity to this program.
Tarek Skubal, by the way, has been ridiculous.
Phenomenal.
Like, he's going to be the unanimous AL Cy Young winner. And in terms of, like, first place votes, for example.
He should be. Yeah.
I can't imagine who's coming in. I mean, Corbin Burns may be second place. I don't know. Like, but it's going to be a distant second. Tarek Skubal has been absolutely magnificent this season. I've really enjoyed watching him pitch.
Did it again against the Rays just now. The Rays kind of seeing this as a pivotal series, trying to get something cobble up together here. And Skubal is just absolutely nuts. Shuts the door. It was really, really fun to see.
We will talk about the Tigers, talk about all of the wild card races, the variety of playoff races across Major League Baseball on the other side. Patrick Dubuque, managing editor from Baseball Prospectus, will join us on the other side. You're listening to Jays Talk Plus and watching it on Sportsnet. Show Ali and Julia Kreutz. We're back after this.
Everything you need to know about the Blue Jays, Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus. Well, hopefully I turn my microphone on. It's always a good
thing.
That is Julia Kreutz. I'm Sho Ali. We're on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also on Sportsnet Television. Don't forget, the Blue Jays, the fourth last game of the season, goes later tonight. You can watch it on Sportsnet Television as well. You can listen to it on the network. Ben Shulman and Chris LaRue will have the call on the radio. First pitch goes 7:07 p.m. Eastern on the network down at the Rogers Center to help us discuss things going on elsewhere around the major leagues of baseball. It's Patrick Dubuque, managing editor of Baseball Prospectus. Patrick, how are you?
Good, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we appreciate you carving out some time for us this morning. I know you're on the West Coast, so thank you for getting up early for us. It's much appreciated here on the East Coast. You know, we were talking before we brought you on about our favorite storylines, I suppose, of the MLB playoffs as, like, playoff races begin to take shape, the wild cards begin to kind of sort themselves out. and we were revisiting some bold predictions, and one of our texters had actually said back in July that the Tigers would be a wild card team. Well, that person, Clifton, is likely, I would say, correct if the Tigers can hang on here in these last couple of games. I have been so impressed by the Tigers, Patrick. I got to say, they've been one of my favorite storylines, I think, in all of baseball. There are a lot of them. But Tarek Skubal going to win AL Cy Young, and the Tigers getting a postseason berth over many other teams we thought would make it over them. It's very impressive.
It is impressive. It's especially impressive given what a job of managing has been. This is a team that has been put together very well in the sense that you look at it and it's still not quite clear how they're managing to pull it off. They have three regular hitters who are above average bats. Kerry Carpenter is their best hitter, and he's barely on the field. It seems like he missed half the season, but when he's been on the season, he's just kind of hitting like Aaron Judge almost. It's a very interesting team. They still only have two starters, I think, maybe. But they seem to somehow have managed to pull it off.
It's interesting, Patrick, because Sho and I were talking during the break that the AL Central, I guess, it wasn't necessarily a division that you would look at for the longest time here and, you know, put it in the upper echelon of Major League Baseball, let's put it like that. And then all of a sudden, it's a great division and it's very, very fun baseball and it's kind of coming down to the wire here when it comes to the wild card race. I guess, what have you seen from that division this season? What has been the biggest difference there?
Well, I think that, you know, it's funny, the AL Central particular, but the Centrals in general have been kind of the punching bag of baseball for a while now. These teams are good. Like, this isn't, we're so used to the Centrals being kind of the participation trophy of baseball, where, you know, we have the unbalanced schedules, and so somebody will get in, but you'll never, you know, they'll be out in the first round, and we don't really have to worry about them. These are all decent teams, even the Minnesota Twins, despite their attempts to look like otherwise. Kansas City has the second or third best run differential in the American League. Like, they went out this year and they decided they were going to be a playoff team. They went off and signed players. They patched holes and they were acting as if this would happen. And it did happen. And like, baseball teams that actually bothered to do that deserve some credit.
You know, as we discuss the AL Central, I got to ask you about the Guardians, only because it just feels like for a team that has won 91 games, probably going to win a couple more by the end of the season, no one is really talking about them all that much. Okay, just is that, Patrick, simply because they are not a sexy pick? Like, it's just easier to talk about the Astros, who clinched their division for the bazillionth time last night, and the Yankees, who are always the Yankees. It's always kind of fun to talk about the Bronx Bombers. It's kind of fun to talk about the Yankees, whether they succeed or, frankly, whether they fail, too. It's always going to be a storyline because the Yankees are the Yankees. But it just feels like for a team that is a 90-plus win team, we have perhaps not spoken enough about Cleveland.
Well, I think there are teams that have the great players that you can just talk about them being great, like the Yankees. You can just point to Soto or Judge. There are the teams that don't look like they're going to be great, but then you can point to their up-and-coming players or the players who have taken another step. And then there are the Guardians. And it's hard to talk about them because they don't make a ton of sense. They have Jose Ramirez. They have Stephen Kwan, who is now just an excellent hitter. They have David Fry, who was basically Aaron Judge for the first two or three months of the season and has kind of coasted since then. We don't know what their rotation is going to be in the playoffs. I don't know who their third starter is going to be. I don't know if Stephen Vogt knows who their third starter is going to be. It's very difficult to talk about them, let alone explain why they're good. Ben Lively, KBO star Ben Lively. I don't think he was that good in the KBO, but he has been one of the mainstays of the rotation this year. Teams that have Ben Lively as their second best starting pitcher probably usually don't make the playoffs very much. So it's hard for us to sit down and say, oh, sure, let's give glory to the Guardians, who we don't understand.
Yeah, it'll be very, very interesting to see how that team fares in the playoffs, which is a different beast. And, you know, starting pitching especially here is so much more important come that time. But I wanted to also, you mentioned the Yankees there, Patrick. They're leading the division right now by a couple of games. Obviously, you know, they get Juan Soto. They were aggressive at the trade deadline as well. They bring in some guys. But in my mind, at least, this was still the Orioles' division to lose. And obviously, there's still a couple of games left. Things could flip-flop a little bit here. But I guess my question is, are you as surprised as I am to see the Yankees lead the AL East at this point in the season?
No, I'm not. I think that, I mean, first of all, Giancarlo Stanton's healthy. This is a team that basically for a large part of the season was two guys carrying the team, right? It was Judge and it was Soto. But now it's more like five or six, right? The Jazz Chisholm trade turned out wonderfully. Even with the position change that came out of nowhere, he's done very well and adapted to third base quite well. That trade has worked out better than I think anybody could have imagined. Austin Wells has turned out to be, you know, he's one of those rookie of the year candidates that won't get a single vote, but has managed to bring in a very, very good rookie season. He's one of the best defensive catchers, and he's, you know, an above average hitter. And then you've got, you know, you've got all these players. Gleyber Torres, I think, has kind of fallen, you know, flied under the radar as far as his season goes. He's, you know, he had a rough first half of the season, and he's built himself back up to be a legitimate, decent part of the lineup. They only really have one or two holes left, and this is for a team that had more hole than it had actual players in it when we were back in July.
Yeah, it's true. It's funny. As long as Gleyber is not running himself into outs on the base paths as he did last night, I think the Yankees will probably be fine. You know, I'm curious, Patrick, and we're chatting with Patrick Dubuque, managing editor of Baseball Prospectus here on Jays Talk Plus. Show and Jules here with you until the top of the hour. I am curious, when it comes to pitching to the Yankees' bats in the playoffs, and you mentioned guys who are not Aaron Judge and Juan Soto, obviously, who will be asked to carry the mail a little bit more as Judge and Soto are pitched to very carefully. It's just that in the regular season, I get it, though, right? Like, you take your chances with Judge and Soto because even if they are being historically compared to Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig, and I mean, it sounds wild to say, but they've been that good. In the end, it's just a regular season game in a year where they're going to win 90-something games. In the playoffs, though, I mean, how do those guys pretty much ever get a pitch to hit, right? Like, I know you mentioned a healthy Giancarlo Stanton. He's slimmed down. Austin Wells has been very, very good. Jazz Chisholm Jr., like you said, has been good as well. Torres, phenomenal stuff from him in the last couple of weeks, even though it's been a little hit or miss on the base paths. But, like, wouldn't you rather take your chances with basically all of those guys than at any point take your chance with Judge or Soto?
Yeah, I mean, one of the reasons for those Gehrig Ruth comps is that their teammates have helped make them look like those two players. I think that, first of all, having two of them is a real big help. It's very easy to pitch around one guy. It's a lot harder to pitch around two guys in a row. And yes, it will ultimately come down to, can the other players on that lineup, can the people behind them pick them up? And that's kind of baseball, right? When we get to the playoffs, we want to craft grand narratives about heroism and everything, but really it's hitting with runners in scoring position. And sometimes you do, and sometimes you don't. This team, I think, is constructed as well as, I mean, especially now that Jason Dominguez seems to be entrenched as the left fielder. I think that they've done as well as they can to mitigate the luck, given that you can never really mitigate luck in baseball.
Let's switch to the other side of the country then. Why don't we? And I wanted to ask you, Patrick, about the Padres, you know, turning that triple play to, which incredible stuff, really, you know, movie script type of thing. But they're two games back in that NL West, and all of a sudden things look a lot more interesting than they should. Can the Padres pull this off? Can they steal the NL West away from Ohtani's Dodgers?
From a narrative standpoint, I love this Padres team. It is very funny. And I love a funny team. The season is so long, you can forget that the Padres, in game 100, they were 50-50. They have been 500 more often than any other Padres team in history, and one of the most often in like the last 30 or 40 years. They spent the entire first half of the season being exactly 500. And now they're one of the best teams in baseball. They basically, since 50-50, they've played at a 117-win stretch.
Oof.
Yeah, I know. And it's with the team that they built last year to do this, and it didn't, right? And everybody, you know, like after the celebration, everybody was talking about Peter Seidler, and it's true. Like, this is the print of Peter Seidler is all over this team. It just took one extra year and also Jackson Merrill for it to work.
Maybe Luis Arraez was a good addition there, too.
But it is nice to see, because I personally want to see effort rewarded. And the Padres of last year were effort, right? They went for it last year and it didn't work. And it turns out that, you know, there was a lot of hand-wringing about, oh, did they spend too much money? Did they not do it the right way? No, they did it the right way. They just had to wait a year. And that sometimes that's what happens. Sometimes you just have a lost season and you pick it back up, and you do it again. And they had to cut payroll. They had to trade Soto. And they've still managed to do it because there was enough quality already there.
I did want to ask you, as Julia brought up the Dodgers as well, Patrick, I did want to ask you about Shohei Ohtani in the sense that let's say there was only one MVP. Okay, let's say you could only give out one MVP across baseball, and so essentially you're picking between Ohtani and Judge. Like I'm curious how you would make that evaluation, because I am a fan of round numbers, so the 50-50 yeah. club, I think, is makes it a lot easier for me personally to choose someone like Shohei Ohtani. But it's hard to dismiss what Judge has done over the balance of the whole season.
And I'm old enough to, there's been a lot of Oakland Athletics talk lately, remembering that team as they go through their final stretch. I'm old enough to remember the Jose Canseco 40-40 year of 1988, and the magic that was surrounded by that. It really captured the imagination of everybody. And there's something about that combo, the power-speed combo, that really just kind of makes everyone sit back and enjoy it. Even though stolen bases aren't that valuable, right? It's as far as comparing Ohtani to Judge, it's unfortunately just the boring answer is the correct answer here, which is that Aaron Judge plays a mediocre center field and Shohei Ohtani cannot play the outfield. And that is the ultimate difference. Right. That's what makes Judge a better player, at least this year. Judge is technically still a better hitter as well. It helps that Aaron Judge is walking 18.8%. He's basically walking like Barry Bonds without getting any of the credit for it. It's just, this is the season for Judge. We've stopped talking about it because of the Paw Patrol, you know, 2-week slump that he went into. He still hit 56 home runs. He still has more home runs than Ohtani. He still has, 20 extra points of batting average, 60 extra points of slugging percentage. Like, he's just, like, this hitter. He's such an incredible hitter. And he stayed healthy all season. He's 690 plate appearances. Like, this is just the perfect Aaron Judge season. I don't want there to be one MVP. Let's just have the two MVPs.
Sorry it's to put so you much in that easier. Position.
I'm glad. The Ohtani Lindor conversation was interesting for a while, but that settled itself out too. We Judge and Witt, we had a nice talk about that, but we're done. We have winners. It's nice to have winners once in a while.
It is good to see the season sort of just resolve itself in those terms, Patrick. But one thing that I was wondering here, and we can let you go shortly, but this will be the first time since 2017, COVID season excluded, that we don't have a 100 win season, which seems a bit odd, right? We've kind of gotten used to that, and obviously you kind of understand that the balanced schedule can play a factor in there, but you look at a team like the Dodgers, a team like the Yankees, and you would expect them to be winning 100 games. Just hasn't come to pass. What have you made of that, I guess, that lack of, one or two powerhouses in the league?
I think there are still powerhouses. I think their powerhouses have been disguised by what's kind of happened in the regular season. I mean, the Dodgers clearly have just had a plague of locusts descend upon them. They cannot keep a pitcher healthy. Like, even pitchers who have thought about pitching for the Dodgers just got hurt. Just in their kitchens in the morning.
Just thinking about it.
It's kind of just incredible. The Phillies feel like they should be a 100-win team. Like, they have had more of the luck as far as keeping people healthy, but then they've had their own spate of injuries, given how many of their players are in the 30s. The Houston Astros, I think, are, to me, clearly the dominant team in the American League. They happen to start off, as one of the worst teams of baseball for a month and a half. And so, if you look at Houston since that 9-16 start or whatever, they're 100 win. They've been playing like 100 win team ever since. The Padres are playing like 100 win team right now. We just had this weird season where it never came together for the full run. I think as far as like the talent goes, we're fine. We're doing okay.
Yeah. We'll be back next year.
Yeah, exactly. Patrick, hey, look, we appreciate you carving out some time for us here. I appreciate you getting up early for us. Thank you so much for doing this. And enjoy the playoffs. They're not that far away.
Oh, they sure aren't. I should probably get ready for them. Thanks.
There he goes. Patrick Dubuque, managing editor of Baseball Prospectus. He's a font of information, fun to catch up with
fun
him.
Fun chat, for sure.
Yeah, and the reason I asked about the Universal MVP, it's just I love watching Ohtani and Judge. I got to say, like, there are, I mean, yeah, I do. I love watching the Blue Jays, and I will always love watching the best hitters in franchise history. But I just, there are a couple of guys, I said this to you before a couple of times off the air too, but like, there are a handful of guys across baseball that I just love watching, period. Judge is one of them. Ohtani is one of them. Honestly, Yordan Alvarez is one of them. What a very pretty swing he has.
I love it.
There are maybe a couple other guys as well. Bobby Witt Jr. is getting up there, I think. But, I mean, man, it's fun to watch the powerhouses take some swings. Mm. And I can't wait. Ohtani going to break one of the longest slumps in terms of active players never to see a postseason game. And we're going to see that broken at some point in the next couple of days here.
Playoff Ohtani? I cannot wait. That's going to be so much fun.
Before we go, we got a couple minutes left here, Jules, talking about great hitters. Today is the anniversary of, I would say, the best hitter in the history of the Blue Jays, at least right now. Maybe things change if Vladdy signs a long-term deal. But Carlos Delgado, of course, as we know, famously hitting 4 home runs in a single game 21 years ago today, September 25th. 2003. Yeah, if you're watching on television, there's some highlights of the man just jacking some home runs at the then Sky Dome. And boy, I think the last one was hit over the restaurant out there in the outfield. And it's just, he was a monster.
This is pretty awesome.
I don't know if I've ever said this to you before, but Carlos Delgado is my favorite athlete, period. Like, if I were to like make a list of every sport, Delgado is like that guy. I was lucky enough to interview him during the pandemic, but what a guy. It's funny, he was actually at the Rogers Center, I think, when the Mets were in town. And Ben Shulman told me he got to meet him. I was here at the station that day. But it's funny because when I think of him, you know, you see it on the TV, but you think of him with the goatee.
Yes.
I guess he had shaved. And it's funny because I saw a picture of him. I'm like, is that Carlos Delgado?
There's something missing. What are we doing?
I loved watching Carlos Delgado. But I mean, I'll say this though, Jules. A legend, is the franchise leader in a lot of the most, like the biggest offensive statistics in the history of the franchise. Yeah. If Vladdy signs a long-term deal, he will shatter those records. If he stays healthy, he will destroy those records, which is kind of crazy to say.
It is, and it kind of speaks to, you know, the greatness that can come out of Vladimir Guerrero Jr. But when you mentioned that this was the anniversary of Delgado's 4 home run game, I actually did some research. I found a Sabre article that says the following. Delgado was feeling under the weather. He was on antibiotics. He took a little nap before the game. Maybe that's the secret. Take a nap. You'll hit 4 home runs. It's kind of weird to think about that as like his flu game or whatever.
Right, right.
It just adds to the lore of that specific game. Such a cool moment for the franchise.
Yeah, he's the man. I gotta say, it's just fun. It's fun watching him. I know, you know, when we talk about the Hall of Fame and Carlos Delgado, was he a Hall of Famer? It's probably tough given the era he played in, but maybe I'm a giant homer, Jules, but I will die on this hill that if he had the exact numbers he had to end of his career and he played for like the Yankees, he'd be in the Hall of Fame. He would like no doubt be in the Hall, or play for the Dodgers or something. He'd be in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Like 1,000,000,000%. And I mean, I know he didn't play for the Jays his entire career. When he went to the Mets, he had some pretty good seasons as well, which I think boosted some of his career numbers, but I mean, gosh, he is like one of my favorite players, easily one of the best Jays ever, if not the best Jay ever. Depends on, I think, the era you grew up in, right? Different eras, I think, would have different guys. But I mean, Carlos Delgado was so much fun. It's just kind of, which is why I think it's crazy that we can even kind of compare Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to him, because boy, I mean, Vladdy signs that long-term deal. I mean, he's not that far away from all-time home runs already, which is kind of crazy if he, again, relatively young, needs to stay healthy, but very impressive stuff at a young age.
If you want to continue the comparisons, I guess, that was also Delgado's runner-up MVP season.
Oh, there you go.
Lost to A-Rod. So, you know, sorry to bring that up, but you kind of look at, if you want to keep the comparisons going, I think that there's more to it than that. It would be really, really fun to see Vladdy kind of, you know, take a crack at that and go for those records. Always nice to watch history unfold before your eyes, I would say.
Jules, it's always nice when we get to be on the air together.
Oh, it is.
This
was
the last
history in the making all the time.
This is the last time we're going to be on the air together, I guess. I guess the next time we'll be doing Jays Talk Plus or Jays Talk Classic will be next season.
2025.
Yeah.
Can you believe it?
This is so much fun. It's always fun to see you. It's always fun to do these shows with you.
Thank you so much. The season has been, all things considered, a lot of fun, and you're a big part of that. Thank you.
You are as well. That is Julia Kreutz from MLB.com. You can find her great work on MLB.com. Julia, C-K-R-E-U-Z is where you can find her on Twitter. Before we go, a reminder that the series tonight at the Rogers Center wraps up with the Jays and Red Sox. 7.07 p.m. Eastern is the time of first pitch. It'll be on Sportsnet TV as usual. On the radio, Ben Shulman and Chris LaRue will have the call on the network. Thanks to our guest, Patrick Dubuque. Thanks to Jen Rolnick, to Andrew Adams, and to Amit Mann. For Julia Kreutz, I'm Show Ali. JSTOC Plus returns tomorrow morning. We'll talk to you later.